This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 157 for property ID 18126800, and the property is owned by C. Arrow LLC. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Dennis Ingram here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to remind you that we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. And before I turn it over to you, I'm going to ask you, did you receive the communication from the county on this property?
I don't think, I haven't received anything recently, but I did speak with somebody with the office a couple of days ago. Following up on some prior discussions, and it sounds like that they're going to make a substantial adjustment in recognition of the wetland setbacks and so forth. There's very little room for residential development on that parcel.
Right. They've reduced it down to 1,173,280.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one. Verbally, there was a discussion of reducing it down below 500, but, you know, the problem being is, and no, I have not seen that.
Okay. All right, so go ahead and I'll turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal then.
Yeah, the last conversation I had, and I was under the impression that they were going to discuss it further yesterday or the day before. But the problem is that there is access onto 179th. The catch is, and that temporary access could be used for some additional residential use. But this is not that large a parcel by the time you remove not only the wetland area, but the road area, and then the wetland setback requirements under the county code. And so that doesn't leave a whole lot. And they said, well, you can use the current access, you know, until the other parcels, you know, are available for putting in the road. Well, the problem with doing that is that then you can't build where they have a prospective road. They're not going to give approval to build in the county road, the designated county road. So by the time it's all said and done, that doesn't add much in the way of residential. And she was looking at it to try to see if there was even room for one more residence on the property on the south. But, and that, you know, with the setbacks from the road and so forth, it would be, you know, very crowded. Plus you have a wetland setback from the class two stream.
Right.
And this was addressed. I did get an updated letter from my planning consultant that is familiar with the county rules, and that's in the file this year. The other issues, and I kind of assumed that they were looking at this from as a commercial development as an apartment property, but she did say that no, they're not looking at it that way, but just as residential, and you could split it into multiple parcels. And but I just don't see how that can. I haven't found any way that can happen contrary to what the planning consultant says, is that this is not, it isn't consistent. And then the other thing that's in there is that this is a 6-acre piece minus the designated public road for public road purposes, minus the wetland area, and The only thing that sells for a lot of money is when there is, that's, you know, for units of development. And in other words, how can you develop this thing? And my reason for buying it was to provide access, I own the property to closest to the south. It only has an easement over the 30-foot strip going out to 179th. It's just a residence. And but the guy in front who owns the parcel that's on 179th where the road would be built, he doesn't want to move. He's quite content with his 1 acre or whatever it is. And I had anticipated, based on the plans of a few years ago, that Clark County would buy his property for the roundabout that was designated there. And then I could build the road in, and it would continue on to property to the north of this parcel. And this was primarily for that purpose, so that I could develop property to the north. But that isn't going to happen because we don't have a roundabout. The county's decided not to construct the roundabout. They're only doing the roundabout over at 29th Avenue. And then, so it was a value, extra value to me. But then the other thing that has changed, of course, is interest rates have now doubled from what they were at the time I bought that. And so the prospects for development have decreased accordingly, you know, with the cost of, just due to the cost of money to do a development. But I can't get there from here.
You're only appealing the one parcel, right?
Right.
Yeah. But you own
They haven't boosted the value. Pardon?
You own both of those parcels, though?
I own the individual house to the south of it. Yes. It's a small investment company that owns this parcel that we're appealing. The other thing I should point out is that their property to 10-acre parcel on 189th to the northeast. It adjoins this one kind of on the corner. It's just, they touch on the corner. There's a 10-acre parcel there. That sold for $900,000. And then just this last year, a parcel further to the east, 14-acre parcel approximately, and that was sold $1.4 million. The figure that I came up with is that for development, even, and those are both potential, you know, for additional unit development. The 14-acre one is the one I'm referring to, is on that you have the 10-acre piece highlighted, and that sold for $90,000 an acre.
That's the
that one.
Yeah, this top right one is the first one. I'm not sure which is the east one you were referring to. I can highlight it if you'd like.
Well, it's Nick. It is the larger piece that is south of that one, and to the right, if you're looking at the map, there, right there, where your marker is. Yeah, that one. That sold in September of this year for $1.4 million. And it's 14 acres. That's a, you know, approximate numbers just off.
Is that the one that ends in 239,000?
That property.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble with my eyes this morning.
The property ID he's speaking of that's sold for 1.4 million, that's almost 14 acres, is property ID 18139000.
Right. And the big advantage for that property is that it does border directly onto 179th.
Got it. All right.
But it kind of gives a, you know, average value per acre. And in my letter, cover letter, I think I indicated it was, you know, my estimated value per acre, assuming development was somewhere around that $95,000 per acre valuation, given 900,000 for 10 acres, and as well as this one, as well as another third comparable.
The difference. Looking at the aerial photo and all of that, has this wetlands that runs through the northerly portion of it, looks like in there, but there's a set of buildings up in the north and northeast corner of your property. Yeah. That must access from some other place.
It hasn't.
If you're coming in from 179th, is there a road or a street that actually goes clear to that northeast corner?
Yeah, it's to the east of it.
East boundary, and it's an easement.
An easement. Right. So in your development, you'd have to have, in order to really use that, you'd have to put some kind of bridging something to get back there for an acceptable road, or will the easement work?
Ordinarily, my understanding is you can't do it off an easement. You have to own it and build a road. You know, you need to own the access. An easement access, typically, as near as I know, they don't allow. You can do it for one residence or limited, but you can't do it for development.
Well, how soon is those roads going in?
Well, they decided not to build the roundabout, so I don't think any roads are going to be built.
So you don't think they're going to put 22nd Avenue in there like they talked about or whatever? Or would that kind of a mute thing now?
What they told me is that they're going to let the developers do it.
Oh, that's nice of them.
But if you don't own the land, you can't do it.
That's right.
And I'm not actually a developer. I mean, I'm acquainted with developers and so forth, but I don't personally. I did one development 20 years ago. Maybe it was 30. I forgot. One little project many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And that's the extent of my development. But I'm familiar, you know, I'm generally familiar. Here's the other thing that I don't understand this based on my conversation. What they said, well, we're comparing it to the other properties that sold there nearby for high values. Well, exactly. The adjoining piece to the west, it sold for $2 million. And it's not a very big piece. The difference is they could build, they built 150 apartments in there because they have access directly onto 179th. And they don't have, and they didn't have any significant wetland. And then the most interesting thing, and we reviewed this in the prior hearings, the former owner, see, I owned that piece just next to it. And so my neighbor to the north of me was approached by the developer of that parcel that adjoins us to the west. And he approached the neighbor and he said, well, I got a problem. I'd like to give you some land, but you have to agree to build a road in the future across the wetland. And he didn't like the whole situation, even though the developer was offering him $300,000 to do it, to take the land. That's the interesting part, because I've never seen this before. So he came and talked to me, and he said, I know you wanted to buy this place. I'm willing to sell it, but you got to give me the $300,000 that this developer said he would give me. And so I talked to the developer and I said, okay, I'm going to buy the land. It will go become part of my land. I'll pay the extra money. And then I'll, because the developer is going to give me, and the deal I made with the developer is he is going to give me $350,000 back. So that's how I ended up getting the place for $740,000 as far as my cost. Now, yeah. The problem I've at that time, I thought the county was going to, and the plan was that they were going to put a roundabout right there at the, and they said that there's some kind of obligation to keep that roundabout exactly there in front of the Whipple Creek condominiums where they come out onto 179th. And that means it would impact that place to the south of me that's between me and 179th. But then the county said, after I bought the place, and maybe a year or two later and things change, they said, well, we're not going to do that. We're only going to do 29th Avenue. And we're going to, so that just means I can't do anything with that piece, really, because I can't get out to 179th in a manner that will allow me to develop. But the developer that did pay $2 million for that 6-acre piece, what he did is he made an agreement with the owners to sell it to him, subject to him getting all the planning approval done before he actually bought it. And once you get all the approvals done, that makes a big difference.
Right.
And then the stream back there where that road has to cross is, they thought originally it was a class 3 stream, and I don't know all the details on these streams, but then it got upgraded to a class 2 stream, so that means more setbacks, more cost, and so I actually lost money on this purchase in terms of value, because there's no way we can build enough units in there, you know, to be worth it to a developer, assuming that they went through the process and applied for all the permits. We just wouldn't get very much in the way of buildable sites. So that's why I came up with that $680,000. And then after talking to the assessor the other day, I was under the distinct impression that she figured that number was even high after looking at it more closely. But I haven't seen anything further or talked to her. And I don't know when it was sent out with the $1 million valuation, but I think that that's when they still thought that I could develop off the 30-foot flag that goes out to 179th.
Yeah.
One last thing I'll mention real quick is that the guy out front has been encroaching on about half of that flag lot for the last 20 years plus, for a very long time. And so there's a real, if I try to expand a 30-foot width, I might have an argument, you know, what happens if you don't. But that was long before I bought it, that he started using that flag lot.
Well, it looks like it comes right in front of his doorstep.
It does.
If I'm looking at the right, that long flag that goes down to 179th.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like it comes right in front of his front door.
Yeah, he, when the apartment project started, he decided to build a fence in his front yard on the property line. I think he took it back down because it was right there. It was so close. Mm-hmm. But there's an old fence, and you can see it even in the aerial, right out there at 179th, and there's a concrete curb underneath it. And it looks to me like it's been there a long time. And I know enough about you know, those kinds of things, to know that I don't want to get into an argument about that use.
Yeah, he gets it by adverse use or whatever they call it.
Adverse possession. So I have one last question on it. In the county's write-up on their review and that, they were saying that as they looked at it, this site has a potential for 40 to 60 lots as if it was developed. So what's your opinion of what it might be able, you know, what's the development potential? Is it really 60 lots or would it be considerably less?
I think it's considerably less because of the wetland setback requirements. And then the second thing is that fails to consider the road that they're specifying has to be built for the traffic circulation plan. And the county was real strict about that with the neighbor. So strict that they said, you got to build it. And he did build the 22nd Avenue, or no, 20, what is it, 182nd Street or something like that, across his property, east-west. But he couldn't build 22nd Avenue to the north on his property because the Corps of Engineers said that, well, that's a protected wetland, and we're not going to let you put just a road out there in the woods just to... You know, we're just not going to do that. It's not connected to anything. It's an orphan road, and we're not going to do it. Yep. So that's why he was willing to pay so much money to get rid of that piece of land.
Okay, I'm good. I don't have any other questions. So thank you.
Thank you.
So you're still asking for the 740 number? Is that so?
Well, this time I decided to... really should be reduced. I think the maximum value is 680 based on more recent sales.
And what sales are those now?
The 10-acre piece and the 14-acre piece are both below 90,000. They're both below 100,000 an acre.
So you don't have that information in here?
Yeah, it's in there.
Where is that?
It's in that comparison sheet or sales comparable workup.
And which
I see a 10-acre piece and a 13 and a half acre piece.
Right.
One sold for $9.25, the other sold for $1,460,000.
Right.
Okay.
And the one for $1,460,000 borders right out on 179th.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not seeing those. Where are those located?
They're halfway down the sheet, almost to the end of this, about midway into our packet.
Oh, I'm looking at the sheet that's toward the back.
It has the header received, I think, on 219. I can pull it up for you and send you just that sheet later, Dan, if you need.
Oh, here it is. I got it. Okay. Yeah. So you're looking at 680?
I think that's what I put in my letter, yeah. Yeah, I tried to write up a summary of all the information that I gathered.
What page is that letter on?
It should just be about page 3 in the conclusion, where I kind of go through the properties and just discuss it right from the, there's just kind of a cover sheet, and then there's 2 pages of summarizing the packet.
I guess I'm not finding that. Do you have that, John?
I'm kind of looking for it, too. I'm not sure I got the one, but I do have the sales comparison list, and I have a letter from Dennis Ingram, the attorney in Bedford. That stuff, so it must be close to that.
There should be two pages.
In between.
Right there.
The one that I see is a letter dated February 19th, 2025. Is that it?
Yeah.
That's
that one, and then the two pages right that you scanned over.
After I talked about the three
sales, and then right down there at the bottom, I believe. I apologize because my eyes are giving me enough trouble. I can't actually read this stuff this morning.
Okay. That's the page.
Yeah, right down there at the bottom of the screen is what I see it now.
Yeah. Okay. I've got
it. I say 680 or 620? I can't read it.
620.
Okay.
Your letters.
Yeah. Yeah, I just averaged the more recent sales.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
And I'll be calling the assessor because she did realize that there was a big problem with access, and there's not a temporary access option. That was what she said initially, is that they were going on, is that there was they call it a temporary access, because even the place that got developed off next door, off of 179th, the larger plan is for them to use this road that's to be built, you know, someday. And then they would have to abandon their current access onto 179th. And she said, well, you can do the same thing. And I said, except I can't build where the new road's supposed to go. Gotta stay off of that. And I can't build on my 30-foot strip, which would be my only temporary access. So where am I building?
Yeah, okay, you've got that on your original filing. You got it split between land and buildings. You still want that split, or is it just for the land?
Well, they had very little value on the buildings, and they have no, at that price, the buildings have no value, because that, and like I said, I learned in my discussion that some of the distinctions, and it's, you know, not clear to me entirely how the assessor looks at this for development land versus residential land versus multiple parcel residential land.
Who knows?
The only way you can get the added value is you eliminate those buildings that are there. And then
Did we set a value on this last year?
Yes.
It was reduced to 740 last year because I didn't ask. I put the information in to reduce it further, but I didn't ask for more of a reduction. That was what I originally bought it for. And but the realization has started to set in that I may have paid, you know, things that didn't go as I thought they would. Let's just put it that way. It happens sometimes.
All right, I got it.
Okay.
Any other questions, Gloria or John?
No.
No.
Okay. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 166 for property ID 188-315-000. The property is owned by Roger and Barbara Snowy. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Roger here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to remind you, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as to the outcome. You have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
No further questions. There's two main points. Mr. Weaver, I know that you've heard these for the last couple of years. You've heard these same arguments. The two key points I'm going to be talking about is comparable sales and the slope of the property. I did extensive research on values of property and wrote a very thorough and lengthy disclaimer or discrediting what the appraiser used or the assessor used for the comparable sales. That was the two prime arguments that they used was a piece of property that actually was bought by the Richfield School District and is zoned commercial as opposed to R175. The other one that took a lot of research to prove was they used the sale of a singular piece of property that was valued at $5.5 million, and through the research and through I discovered and I did a very lengthy and I think very thorough explanation of what occurred, and that is there was a combination of three properties that were put together by a developer, went through the approval process, and then resold that property within 6 months as a development, not as raw property. And the assessor's office used that second sale, or I mean the first sale of the $5.5 million instead of the original sale, which was, I think it was $2.9 million. So if you look at the actual value of what the raw property sold was approximately $146,000 per acre, as opposed to what they had was over $300,000 an acre.
Yeah.
The other, the comps that I used are the, what I found interesting in doing all my research was how little property is actually sold in the last few years. And even though, if you look at the printout that the assessor's office sent over to you, lots of those have houses on them. So it's difficult to differentiate the values of the house and as opposed to what just the value of the property is. Then if you look at all the sales that were listed, a lot of those sales are in high density areas like St. John's Road, and they're being developed as small lot infill projects where the lots are anywhere from 3,000 square feet to 5,000 square feet, very, very high density. So the only ones that I found, and as I stated in my documents, I didn't cherry pick anything. I looked at exactly what fit the criteria of the property that I'm appealing the value of. And that came out to considerably less than what the assessor has my property valued at. The second part of the argument is buildable land. And the assessor's office in their response letter to you talked about the fact that I did not have a geotech study done. So I commissioned a licensed professional geotech to come out and analyze the property. And as stated in that report that you have a copy of in front of you, there is only 1.9 acres of actual buildable property out of those 5 acres. Now those buildable property is considered land that you can build, make any kind of improvement, which would be roads, utilities, houses, probably driveways. Then there is a section in that report that talks about an area that is in the setback zones from where you can make zero improvements to an area where you can put in fences, landscaping, where you have just minimal disturbance of the soil, and that the rest of that land, which when you add those two together, it was 2.48 acres, just shy of 2.5 acres, that you can do anything with the other property, which would be 2.52 acres, you cannot disturb in any way because of slope instability and the danger of creating landslides. So very simply, you just take comparable sales, how much per acre, and what the usable land is, and you come up with a valuation of that property of $354,729. And as I pointed out in past years, and I did it again this year, there is no exceptions. Whenever land is developed, that unbuildable land is either transferred to the county or to the homeowners association and is treated in a non-taxable situation.
And how do you get to the 354? That comes out to what, about 100,000 an acre or something like that?
No, it would be of land that's actually usable. It'd be 2.48 acres. The average of the other sales.
148,000 an acre.
Yes, and that's used on comparable sales of usable property that's been developed or is going to be developed.
Got it.
I know that this report is like 49 pages long, and I know it's a lot to read. But I wanted to be very thorough in showing legal documents that have been recorded, maps, slopes. I know it's a lot of information here, but I wanted to be thorough in my analysis because I feel very strongly that the assessor's office is in error in appraising this property.
Would you say 2.4 what acres?
2.48 acres.
Okay. So I'm looking at page 7 of 49, and that's where you got this 354,729, and it's based on an average of something. I said 146,000 an acre and 153,000 an acre. Is that the right numbers?
I think I came up, the average value of comparable sales was $143,000 per acre.
Well, anyway, you come up with the 2.48 acres at something under 150,000 an acre. So that's what derives the 354,000.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. I don't have any further questions.
The developable land or the usable part of that land, if you were to do something with it, that lays right next to you, kind of on your, what, be the north and west side. But access to it, you'd have to provide access down from the street down through alongside your property in order to get there?
That's kind of an interesting question, Mr. Marks, because there is, and I don't know how the county ever allowed that, the development that went in to the north of my property or in this case to the east of this property, how they ever allowed that development to go in without providing legal access to it.
Well, where does it have access at?
There is no legal access to it. That's what's interesting, which is against state law.
It would appear that in order to sell that and get access, you'd have to give them access off from your adjoining property where your house is.
That is correct.
That's the way it would look. Yeah.
Yep.
And notice there's a little lot over there that has a narrow strip that comes down to it. But yes. That belongs to the neighborhood association or something. Nope, so probably a park or something.
Nope. That's that I own that piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been, in retrospect, it should have been attached to the property that we're talking about right now, 188-315-000.
Okay.
I don't have any other questions on it.
Gloria, you got anything?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. I think we have it.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate
You'll hear
it.
From us within 30 days.
Okay.
Thank you. Close the hearing.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 201 for property ID 257-608-000. The property is owned by Christopher and Wendy Bentz. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Christopher and Wendy here for the appellants. If you could please both raise your right hands now to be sworn in.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you have given this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
That's true.
Thank you. Just to let you know or remind you that we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Okay, no questions at this time. We appreciate the board's time. As you can see, we did submit our comparable property listings. The assessor's increase of our property value was a little over 18% for that 2024 year, which we think is extraordinarily high, especially with the market and prices. You have the comparables. We've been told our property, our home, is unique. About 20 to 25% of the basement of our place is unfinished. It contains two storerooms and our mechanical room that has our well pump, our hot water heater, the furnace, and that kind of stuff. But the rest is finished downstairs. Since the time we sent you the comparables, comparable property number one did sold in December for $988,000. They took comparable property number two off the market, and comparable property number three did sell for 1.1 So we think keeping our property at the 1.175 is a fair and right thing to do. I guess if there's any questions that you all may have.
The appraisal you presented with your information, all I see was done in 2019. Have you done, and that came up at 950, is that correct?
That was correct. That was our refinance.
Yeah, have you done any, you haven't had that appraisal updated at all since then, have you?
No, we have not.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I missed that. I was looking for it, but which comparable has subsequently sold?
Comparable property number one, the 721 Northwest 352nd, sold in December for $988,000. And comparable property number three, 29th Avenue in Ridgefield, sold for $1.150 in 24. These are what I have from the records looking a couple weeks ago.
The assessor in their analysis had some pretty hefty numbers on comps that sold out of your appraisal, fee appraisal. Are you familiar with those properties?
I am not.
Their number four comparable that they came up with a value of 917 actually sold in January of 24 for $1.7 million, which is a huge number different than what was there. And then their comparable number six, which they end up with $1.2 million, sold for $1.5 million in October of 23. So they had some pretty significant gains on those properties.
I don't know what how comparable those properties are. The three properties that we sent you were the closest to, you know, the square footage. These ones had more bedrooms and more baths and more outbuildings and more landscaped, you know, big shops, barns, and whatnot, vice our property.
What month in 24 did that comparable three sell?
17.
Well, is it
17th of September, 24th.
Yeah, so, got it. Okay. And the other one, number two, you don't know if that's sold or not.
From the records that I saw, it came off the market.
Okay.
The interesting thing was looking at the taxes on that home, they actually dropped their taxes in 24. And they assessed the 25 taxes at 1.1. Which again, I don't know what comparables the assessor used. We didn't receive any of that information.
You didn't receive the document from them?
No, sir. The only thing we've received is the letters from you all after we did the petition, and then the notice of value. It's the only thing that we've seen.
Can you put that up, put up the comparables? I don't know if you can see that or not. Are you familiar with any of those properties?
I can't see them.
Well, they're getting a little bigger now.
The first one's 3504 Northwest 417th Street.
Is that Les Center or Richfield.
Woodland. Woodland.
It's actually Wood.
Well, isn't Woodland's not in our county?
Woodland's not in our county.
South of the river is Clark County.
Oh, yeah, Clark, south of the river.
Yeah.
So it's on the river and.
No, it's not on the river, but it's south of the river, putting it in Clark County.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. We've never seen those, but again, we've sent you the comparables that we found pretty readily that compare.
And where are they from your property?
Well, the two La Centers are within 5 to 7 miles from us. And then obviously Richfield is about 10 miles away.
Only sold for 1.25.
1.25?
Yeah, Zillow says the one on 300 and the first one, the first address on 3504 in Woodland sold for 1.25.
Oh, you're talking about the one that on the assessors.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Are those others in La Center?
The first two of our comparables are in La Center, and the third's in Richfield.
Right. Are you 374th Circle? That's, you're up on the hill, right?
Yes. We're not the top, but we're up Bratton and Bolton, Bolin Road.
352nd is up there also, right?
Yes.
How about Stratton Road? Is that up there?
Stratton?
I'd have to look on the map again.
I think so. Well, that's a decent comparable, but yeah. Didn't know that was in our county. Yeah. It sold for 1.2. I said 1.7.
Did that one sell, number two?
Number two was pulled off the market, according to the records.
Is that the MLS records?
Yes. The MLS records. They pulled it off the market after not selling. Like I said, in that one, they assessed the tax at 1.12, and this year it's 1.1 in 25. I'd have to look on the map to see where Stratton Road is.
Okay.
That one's 4.8 miles from us, according to Google Maps.
Okay.
All right, I have no further questions.
I don't have any questions on it either, thank you.
All
I'm good.
All right.
And thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. You'll hear from us within 30 days.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Close the hearing.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 268 for property ID 145094012. The property is owned by Michael Moran. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Mike here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Yep, got it up.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Just to let you know, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind, the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as to the outcome, and you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Yes, I appreciate that, because this assessor's response has got a number of inaccuracies, misrepresentations, omissions, incomplete information that I definitely need to bring up to an independent entity here, because this is unfair. That petitioner's initial response or the assessor's response, I mean, is oh, there's a lot of errors. There's a lot of problems with it. So first of all, the assessor seems to think that the petitioner concerns have to do with lack of privacy and structural issues. The petitioner's concerns center around two issues: the condition of the structure in the apartment complex. That's not the entire story. The assessor misrepresents what the appeal is based on. The appeal is actually based on three things, and I thought I did that we did a very good job of discussing that in the initial petition. Those three things have to do with the location. They have to do with the items that need to be cured, the long list of those, and the location. And we know how important location is. Moving along here, as I mentioned in the in my reply to the assessor's response, the assessor's statement misrepresents concerns. The subject property's market value is adversely affected by an inferior location with a lot more problems and lack of privacy. And I'll try to touch on those, but there's so many of them that might take a while. And poor building conditions, in other words, cost and cure. These two factors, along with realistic, applicable, comparable property sales, clearly show that the subject property's true and fair market value is quite a bit less than what the assessor is coming up with. So the subject property is not an average quality, it's fair minus. I think that's pretty clear. If you look at the amount of items that need to be cured, if you look at the construction, it looks like it's a lot of latent construction defects. I'll try to touch on those too, that definitely make this subject not an average quality at all. The assessor goes on to say the home is in fair condition. No, that's not correct. How could you say that a home that has a long list of items that need to be cured is, a lot of those issues have to do with poor construction, poor quality control during construction, code issues that definitely were not part of the owner's responsibility. Those all have to do with the fact that this subject property is in poor condition. There's a passing statement in there that the assessor makes about the petitioner's home is now surrounded by two-story home, townhomes and three-level apartment buildings, as it is another property which is adjacent, 145094-10. That's not correct, because that latter property, it sits on a larger lot and it has a sizable backyard. It is not surrounded and confined as much as this subject property. And the word confined is important here, because the fact that this is the subject property is a zero lot line property with minimal setbacks, and the apartments, the huge apartment complex that had minimal setbacks, makes this subject property feel confined. There's a feeling of being boxed in, of being hemmed in. There's no views, hardly at all. There might be a little crack in maybe the northeast quadrant, but confined, it is an intangible word perhaps, but it certainly enters into a prospective buyer walking through this neighborhood and seeing that, and comparing it to other ones that are not as confined, that are more open, that have curb appeal than this subject property. Those prospective buyers are definitely going to say this asking price needs to be devalued. It needs to be decreased. So, I need to refute the statement here about the petitioner's concerns center around the two issues, the condition of the structure in the apartment complex. That's not correct. There's also the fact that we have some comparables that we need to take a look at. This subject property is not comparable to the five so-called comparables that the assessor brought up. They're not even close. I'll try to get to those in a minute, so with the amount of time that we have left. But again, the assessor has misrepresented the petitioner's concerns. The assessor goes on to talk about, seems to me like an somewhat arbitrary definition of wear and tear versus property damage. Not even sure what the property damage has to do with this, because it's not, the assessor doesn't mention it in that so-called response spreadsheet. In any event, as mentioned here, having to do with wear and tear, this petition excludes normal or typical wear and tear items. It excludes flooring, painting, fencing, regular decks, and many other commonly accepted wear and tear items. The petition does include many non-wear and tear, non-typical wear and tear items that need to be cured, and that would certainly affect the price negotiation between a willing purchaser and a willing seller. And the assessing officer must consider all of such factors. I really doubt that the assessor is considering all of these factors, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to give information that shows what some of those other factors need to be considered, and the fact that the assessor did not. The property damage, there's a statement in here about that, and it's a little unclear to me what the assessor's getting at, but it looks to me like this doesn't even apply. The petitioner owns the property, and again, there's nothing on this assessor spreadsheet that talks about property damage. Here's an inaccuracy. The assessor says that of the bids and estimates submitted by the petitioners, only three are from licensed contractors. That's incorrect. That was incorrect at the time of the petition. There's actually four. Please take a look at the information that I submitted. There was previously four separate bids from licensed contractors, and now there's a fifth, because in response to the assessor, there is another bid from a contractor that I send in. It has to do with the insulation for the crawl space. So there's now five, but in any event, at the time of this response, that three is incorrect, should be four. And you know, I should mention too that it's very difficult, even now, 5 years after the pandemic, it's very difficult to get contractors to come in and submit bids. We have tried, we will still try, but a lot of contractors are not interested in small jobs. We've had several of them say that they'll come out, they don't, or that call into the last second and say, sorry, we took a look at the property online and you know, we don't do that kind of work. So that needs to be considered. In the meantime, the next best thing is online estimates. And I understood that it was acceptable to present information from reputable estimating sources online that at least give an estimate as to what the cost would be to cure these items. I believe you have the spreadsheet that I sent over. I think that's a pretty fair estimate. And if anything, it's probably a little bit on the low side, especially given inflation recently. And also given the fact that some of these contractors that we've spoken to, especially for smaller type jobs, they have a set service charge just to come out, let alone to, you know, to do the work, to fix things. So I don't think the assessor was considering that as well. Moving ahead, mentioned the fact that the assessor got the number of bids wrong previously and now. We have please take a look at the additional evidence that includes the insulation estimate from ABA HVAC and Home Solutions. And, you know, the assessor also goes back. I thought we were supposed to go back and bring stuff forward. But in any event, the assessor said that there's a $40,000 cost of cure adjustment. And that was back in 2021. I mean, that $40,000 back then was not adequate at all. We demonstrated a lot more items that needed to be cured back then. So in addition, cost of cure items have increased substantially since 2021. And then the last thing, I'll try to wrap this up real quickly. I want to go into the comparable sales. The assessor's five sales are not comparable to the subject at all. All those five so-called comparables are not apples to apples, not even close. They all have different value features in the subject. They're in better neighborhoods, for one thing. Some of them are, 5 miles away? They have views. One of them is 6 years newer than the subject. They have bigger square footages inside, as well as some of them have bigger lots. And let me see if I can pull that up. Some of them have wonderful views. Some of them have, they all have access to streets. They have, so there's some, at least some kind of buffering. They also have, some of them are near parks. Some of them are near trails. A lot of them have trees around them. This subject property is at the end of a dead end. It's not even a street. There's no curb appeal because there's no curbs. These so-called comparables, they are close to streets. They're not confined. One of them is has a big elementary school behind it with a big playground. Some of them are at the end of a cul-de-sac that have empty lots on another side. Two of them have better zoning, R9 zoning, that's lower density than the subjects. These are not comparable at all. In fact, even the ones that we submitted as comparables at $309,000 and $310,000, those are those are in good condition homes. And by the way, these five comparables that the assessor put out, these are in very good shape. We've looked at those online, and we've looked at those buildings. They're not even comparable at all. You know, please take a second look. I know we're short on time, but please take a look at the list of items that need curing. Some of those items have nothing to do with the owners. Some of those items, a lot of those items, were caused by poor construction quality, latent construction quality defects, latent construction defects. For example, so there's a list of items here that have to do with construction quality or contractor latent defects. One is the crawl space. I mean, it's pretty obvious that crawl space was not correctly finished. The so-called ground plastic covering is scattered all over the place. There's hanging HVAC ducts. The insulation, it was not put in right. It wasn't secured correctly. No wonder the floors are freezing in the kitchen. Look at the hot water heater. There's a photo there. Please take a look at that. You'll see that there's no water can to prevent in case of a water flood. That's a code violation. There's the east side downspouts. There's no downspouts. The contractor omitted them, didn't put them in. That's a defect. That's a construction defect. The main entry porch, please, that is not a typical wear and tear item. That main entry porch, the roof was not extended correctly. That's a contractor or design issue, and that has caused accelerated wear of that deck. It has also made that deck so slippery that when it rains or there's a little snow on it, it's dangerous. You can't walk on it. That is not a normal wear and tear item, and we're frankly concerned that someone's going to slip on that thing, and we're going to be liable for it. So please consider that. The last two things, and I'll wind it up because I know we're short on time, the foundation cracking. We believe that was caused by the contractor not compacting the ground correctly or not putting in good concrete. The last item is the contractor used cheap and low quality materials. They put in the cheapest 4-tab asphalt shingles they could find for the roof. And the furnace, no wonder the furnace is tripping out. It's probably the cheapest one on the market that they could find. So please consider those items. Are there any questions? I think we're out of time.
No, I think we have the picture. Any questions?
I hope so.
Gloria?
Yeah. I'm good, thanks.
I'm good. I've got the stuff that you sent in and what the assessor had and reviewed it, so I'm good on it. Thank you.
Okay, you'll hear from us in 30 days.
Thank you for the opportunity to present a more realistic view as to what the situation is. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Closing. Bye.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. We have 15 minutes scheduled for this property. The hearing before us involves petition number 230 for property ID 167079000. The property is owned by Darlene Pope. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office, but we do have Darlene here for the appellant. If you could please raise your right hand now to be sworn in.
Right hand raised.
Thanks.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you give in this hearing will be the truth under penalty for perjury?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Just to remind you, we're independent from the assessor's office. We're here to hear testimony and make a decision on the value of your property as of January 1st, 2024. Keep in mind, the assessor has the presumption of correctness. You have to overcome that to prevail. Within 30 days after this hearing, you'll get a written response from this board as the outcome. And you have 30 days from that point to appeal to the state. The assessor has that same 30 days to appeal if he doesn't like our decision. So unless you have questions on procedure, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you further explain your appeal.
Thank you very much. So that's a very big packet you guys probably have in front of you, because there's a lot of time and work that went into it. There is a, in response to the appraiser's or the assessor's response to the board, and in the comments on the assessor's five comparable sales, I got a new appraisal. So this is my second appraisal in 5 years, a value of $855,000, which in my opinion is even a little high. I think it would take several tens of thousands of dollars to, my house is wear and tear. And I've looked at some $850,000 houses and I think, okay, with some money, yes. So I have attached previously acquired bids for the kitchen and bathroom remodels totaling $232,860. I think that was in the first packet I dropped off to you. Included in those bids were bids for the furnace and instant hot water heater. He questioned whether or not I had any proof that any of this needed to be done, any of this remodeling needed to be done. First of all, most everything in this house is 20 to 45 years old, so that should speak for itself. Secondly, the bids, in my mind, is what it would take to bring the house up to his $1 million stand. Could this be a $1 million house? Yeah, if I dump $200,000 or $300,000, it will probably more like $300,000 into it. So, anyway, in order to use my instant hot water heater, I have to run downstairs and reheat the hot water button on the hot water heater. It always works, but it isn't always on instant. And I had someone look at it, and the repair bill was more than replacing it. So I'm still happy to run downstairs, I guess. I am adding a Home Depot bid for the laundry room, which was not included. The laundry room probably has the most wear and tear. It's a small room. That remodel bill from Home Depot was $28,412 without any appliances. Obviously, that's a surprising large number to me. So the total bids on all of this, when you take off the furnace, which I had the furnace quit and I replaced it. So the total bid, I took that off, added the laundry room, is $250,347. And that has nothing to do with the downstairs, which has got the original tile, the original pretty much everything as far as I know. So I'm now down on the 1/3 tax. I'm trying to summarize this because I know you guys have been busy. The basement is 1979 and finishes, and I have not submitted any bids for that. A great deal of time and energy was needed to acquire all these bids, and I did replace the furnace, so that should be taken off the bid. I will refer you to the letter of March 1, 2024, summarizing my concern. I'm requesting to Clark County Assessor that they update their computer entry to reflect my diminishing view of the river, which does not reflect the $80,000 value the county attaches to the property. When I look out my window, like in my kitchen and my living room, the living room and dining room really don't have a view. They have a view of trees, but not a river. When I look out my kitchen where I'm standing at the moment, it is less than 1/4 of the window if you're just looking out the whole window. Now, if you want to stand there at an angle and take a picture of the river, you've got a view of the river. And I think that's what people tend to do. I've noticed that in other listings. The other needed, anyway, the plants are growing on the river larger every day. The other needed update is the Clark County category of good. The assessor asserted the quality rating of good is supported given consideration for design, complexity, and materials. I have no doubt that this builder ran out of money given the lower quality materials than one would expect in the structural design of a house. It was built in 1979 on a hillside. As far as I can see, it's two boxes. The first box, you drive into the garage, and behind that, there's the bedroom and bathroom. And then going downhill, there's a second box. So we're talking about two boxes, which apparently is complex design. I see the house as having little street appeal. So the picture that he shows of the house, it's got all these windows and the deck on it. That's the southern part of the house. That's a true picture of the house. After thinking about the fact for a long time, there's no street appeal. So I realized that the west side of the house, which is the front of the house, has one window only above the front door. So the lack of windows makes the house uninviting from the street. Likewise, the north side has one window. Each of the two bedrooms and the bathroom on the right, on the east side of the house. I'm trying to make sure I got my directions right. Has one window. Let's see. The majority of the windows for the whole house face the south, as the picture shows. In 1979, this property was out in the open country. It was really countryside. There were cows here when I first moved in, even 20 years ago, and the view was to the river. So what he showed was 90% of the windows in the whole house on that one side of the house, which makes it look much more elaborate than if you approach it from any of the other sides. When I bought the property in 2004, it had aluminum windows, all plywood cabinets. He corrected me and said the picture showed oak. It's true. It's oak veneer in the kitchen. The oak veneer is currently losing its glue, so it's loose in two or three places. Very inadequate lighting using oak bathroom bar lighting in most rooms, including the kitchen. There were two bathroom bar lights in the kitchen. That was the lighting. The hall and bar lights in the hall, as well as in the bathrooms. That was one of the first things I did, was replace some of the lighting fixtures, but didn't have anybody, and if you're talking about $1 million house, you almost need a designer to improve the lighting, and I never improved the lighting. So the lighting in the living room and the family room is really poor. It's one central light in particular. Oak bathroom bars are the most inexpensive lighting available. Why did he do that? He ran out of money. They're talking about this good being both in design and materials. The materials were never there. I replaced the bar lighting, but not improved the lighting design or lattice design. I verified to the contractor who was at the house, actually two now, that the cabinet boxes are, so all the cabinetry was plywood, which is probably better quality than maybe today, but it was plywood, as I mentioned before. It's just plywood in the kitchen covered with oak veneer. I should have said that we're made of plywood with an oak veneer. I really appreciate wood finishes, but in 1939, paneling was about 1 inch in thick cedar, which covered all the walls in the bedroom, dining room, living room, family room. It kind of gave a lodge kind of feeling to the place, and men loved it. Women said, my friends that came in said, oh, you bought a barn, you bought a boat. They were just appalled. But that was kind of an interesting, I should get a female appraiser in here. In 1979, paneling was an inexpensive solution for covering walls. If paneling was not dated, worn out, and made the space dark, if the paneling was any way attractive, I would have kept it. I love wood. One dining room wall from the ceiling to the floor was shake. Yeah, outdoor shake that we put on the roof. That was one wall. It was also, it extended the kitchen from the ceiling to the countertop. There's not a woman alive, trust me, that wants shake to her countertop. So dusty for one thing. I removed the shakes. The shakes collect dust. 20 years ago, I replaced the hot water heater. It has now lived its lifetime. I replaced the aluminum windows on the first floor. The basement yet to be done. Unfortunately, two of the newer windows and possibly more apparently have lost their seals, according to the window washer. I'm very unhappy about replacing improvements that were made 20 years ago. All of the appliances are 20 years plus. The refrigerator creates that. I need to replace the refrigerator. A buyer purchasing $1 million house will be aware of these factors. The lava rock fireplace has not been in vogue since 1979, according to realtors and contractors that have come through. The fireplace was one of the many outdated features in its 45-year-old house. Unfortunately, the builder did not consult an interior decorator. The layout does not flow well. The lighting is poor. The large space in the master bath is not well defined, particularly for a house. It just isn't $1 million house. It's that simple. Apparently, I made some confusion between class and quality rating on the assessor's forms, and the appraiser's terms of condition. These are two different terms, I now understand. The previous paragraph describes how the builder did not finish the building and the quality of materials that one would expect given the design of the building. The assessor's example of a house given an average versus a good class, he credited $81,900. That's a hunk of change. The assessor contends that there's no evidence that the property's mechanical systems are failing or the property's in disrepair and damage. I've already covered this paragraph about why I got the bids. The laundry room, the bid I added to the laundry room, the sink has paint flosses in it. It's not acceptable for any house, probably. Overall, the house is very quirky. It is one house away from a daily used train track. The corner, my southeast corner of my property, the train goes by. Overall, it does not have access to when you got comps in this neighborhood, in this little cul-de-sac, this area. Everybody has access to a private beach, which is a good selling point, if not a value point. This property was going to need a unique buyer if I don't put the $200,000 or $300,000 into it. And I just quickly wanted to show why I think this is so off. Besides the fact that because the rating class was good and not average, it's always overpaid on taxes. It just got more and more ridiculous, I think, over time. I lived here 15 plus years without squawking about it. So what I next had was his five comps. And just as quickly as possible, part of the problem with these comps is that the information on the comps aren't really even very accurate. The comp number one, which is another little neighborhood down the street, is described in the MLF as completely remodeled, reimagined, and refined contemporary home and sought-after neighborhood along the Columbia River. It has a stream on it. It has outdoor living spaces created with privacy, professional landscaping, and outdoor living spaces. We're talking about custom floating stairs along a soaring fireplace designed by a wise owl home plan. We use, doesn't matter what it does. The point is, there's a new kitchen with new appliances, quartz countertops, five large bedrooms. There's a downstairs that can be used as a separate living space with its own private bath to bedroom, a fireplace, a patio, and there's pictures so that you can see, as hopefully it's all attached, there's a packet, I think, that says number one on it. So it has a stream, designer spaces, this amazing outdoor space, which I'm learning something. Unfortunately, I'm too old to take advantage of it, that if you have this living space outside, it doesn't apparently add to the value of the property. Anyway, it is, as you can see from the entryway and the fireplaces and the wood windows, it's gorgeous. And there's a thing, there's an outdoor living space with the brick fireplace and the TV and the furniture and the hot tub and the outdoor different seating space along a patio. Also heat it. You cannot tell me that people aren't, that this isn't an added space that's attractive to people, and that is not in any way addressed. But I guess overall summary is then if you look on effective year built, they're saying that it was a 1979 house that was, the effective year was 215, but if you read their own summary and look at the pictures, there's 8 years missing. This has been done a lot more recently than 2015, obviously. If you're saying new, I assume 24, 23, 22, somewhere much more updated than 2015. And I don't know how they get those numbers when effective year built, but they took off 280,000 for 2015, so they needed to take out 8 more years. The next one, number two, was sold in 21. My neighbor house a block and a half up the street, up the hill, for for $685,000. It was gutted, totally gutted in 2021. Everybody in the neighborhood knows it. And built brand new and sold in 223. They show for comp number two that they updated it to 212. So there's 11 years missing off of that one. Again, if you wanted to look at the pictures, so you can see the 685 is closer than 800,000 than the $1 million. Again, if you were to flip through the package and see the pictures, this is finished with quality. I'm not sure about the electrical and plumbing, but the things that you see were quality, meant to sell as a $1 million house, as in brand new. Number three, same thing. It was advertised, so number three has no view on their event, but they advertised the view. And if you turned on to the first page in the packet, you can see the view. The view is kind of almost half of the picture, although they've got trees growing up there too. But they were never charged for a view. The other interesting thing I find that whatever the view is, whether it's $80,000, $20,000, or $130,000, there's no adjustments made there at all, which is interesting. But anyway, nothing for the view. This house is actually, so it said 1999, but again, you're talking about view of the Columbia River, you're talking about smart teachers, which is 2024. New roof, HVAC, fresh interior paint, new fixtures throughout, multi-generation, three-car garage, plus a room for RV and fence in the back. I think it's a covered RV. Easy access and to trails and beach access. Anyway, so this one, you see number three was off by 26 years. They're saying that a new roof, to me, doesn't imply 1999. It implies, you know, new HVAC, new roof. So how do you put on new roofs and new HVAC and not have permits? It seems like the assessor's computer system is way out of date for whatever reason. I don't think you can put an HVAC system within without getting a permit, but maybe I'm crazy. So that was number three. We're almost in here. Number four, let's see what happens in number four. Number four is the hardest one for me to figure out, other than the effective year was 1956. It's got less, it's given an average rather than a good quality, but it's really held up well, at least from the pictures. It doesn't look like it has the wear and tear that my house has. It was given a view for $130,000. Most everything in there does look like it's fairly original. And I think somebody overpaid for the house, but I think the only thing that that explains this to me at all is that mid-century is highly desirable in some subcategories. But that one, that one is hard for me to explain. Again, I don't believe that the HVAC and the roof on that is 1956. I mean, obviously, there's been some updates in the house, and they gave it $125,000 for having done nothing important, apparently, since 1956. Number five is the most interesting at all. If I could sell my house and buy this one for $300,000 more, I might do it in a moment. It has both Mount Hood and river views. It has a less value on the view than the one that has just the river view, as far as I know, in number four. It is in Fisher's Landing. It was given 1998 as the last update, which was 25 years ago. So that would affect that number greatly, I would think. I can't argue when the last update is, but if you have the packet and you can look at the pictures, you can see that this is like super quality home. I mean, everything about just the furniture alone. If I bought the house, I'd have to have the furniture too, because it's like super quality. Anyway, in every room, if you can look at the first picture, every room has a view of the river. It is on the river. The second one is the bedroom where you wake up looking at the river. Again, everything, amazing quality. There's a private deck that runs forever that, again, is right on the tracks. And you can see, I mean, how do you compare my house to something exactly on the river? And the quality is 100. I don't know all the amenities that belong into Fisher's Landing at the gated community, but I'm sure there are more. Anyway, so I threw in the packet. You could see the quality of this house. There's some new updates on this, according to them, for 25 years. I would think that there's probably roots and HVAC involved in that, but I can't prove that. But it just seems very strange that nobody buys permits on these or has permits on anything they've done in the last 10 to 25 years. So that's my argument. I think that what they're dealing with is comps that they, I found this by just looking at the MLS. I'm assuming they're looking at the permits, and maybe if they spent more time updating the permits or updating their computer, that we wouldn't be spending so much time trying to argue this out. Anyway, I hope that, does anybody have any questions that I could answer?
No, I think I've got it. Gloria?
I'm good.
John?
I'm fine. I've listened and been on this thing a couple of years, so yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you very much, you guys, for your time and your knowledge and being there. I greatly appreciate it. And, I will try and get together. I have kind of put off doing this, but I need to get together with the assessor and sit down with him and have him explain to me how we can get this computer updated, because it's just wrong, plain and simple.
All right.
As far as...
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
I close the hearing.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. The hearing before us involves petition number 270 for property ID 215-882-140. The property is owned by Donald and Cheryl Bruno. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. We have no one present from the assessor's office and no one present for the appellant. No detailed quantitative information was provided by the appellant for board review, and the assessor's evidence included two comparable sales and a cover letter recommending no change to the assessed value. The appellant disagreed with the appraiser's findings. I will turn it over to Chairman Daniel Weaver.
Since there's no one present for either party, we'll make a decision based on information available. Any questions?
No questions.
No questions.
Close the hearing.
This is the March 20th, 2025 hearings of the Clark County Board of Equalization. Before us, we will be reviewing late files. Board members present by video conference are John Marks, Gloria Matthews, and Chairman Daniel Weaver. The first late file we have is our only late file. It is a request from reconvene submitted by Ruben Kovalenko and Ella Casagrande. The property ID is 555-60000. They submitted request for reconvening code 3, which states that they purchased the property in an arm's length transaction between July 1st and December 31st of the assessment year for less than 90% of the assessed value. I'll pull up that property here really quick, but right now they stated they're requesting a reevaluation. They purchased it for $285,000, I think in December. I will confirm that. And they need $8,000 worth of deck repairs, which have not been completed. But to double check the details to fit the reconvening code, it was purchased for $285,000 in December 2024. Which does meet the date requirement, and the assessment is $365,056. So doing the math really quick, they are coming in at 78% of the assessment.
Then it fits the criteria, and we should do it.
Yep.
Sounds good. I will mark this as approved, and that concludes our late files for today.
Close the hearing.